Prolific Design Center in West Hollywood, California. One night where entrepreneurs of all genres come together celebrating entrepreneurship. You can call it a Hollywood red carpet remix, where entrepreneurs put their own personal spin on Hollywood red carpets, discovering their own Oscar-worthy award show with the help of the EOTM Awards. For more information, follow on Twitter at EOTM Awards and like on Facebook at EOTM Awards. Visit www.eotmawards.com for ticketing information. This is a EOTM Media Group production.
What's going on? My name is Stephen Knight, and you're listening to The Stephen Knight Show. Show here on EOTM Radio. We're back from spring break. As always, I have to thank you for joining us tonight. We'll be discussing the latest in entertainment news, sports, fashion, and movie reviews. Tonight, we're all about books. We welcome two motivational speakers and authors. First, we chat with Greg Shillow, author of the book, The Dad Who Is There, My Journey to Becoming a Plus-Side Father. And then, April Marquette, author of the book, Improbable, The Cohorts Generation Next, Book 1. As always, once you're part of the discussion, so call them with your questions and comments. The number is 718-664-6543. Again, that's 718-664-6543. You can also join us in chat. There's a link on our Facebook page. Now, Aaron is out today. He's actually in West Virginia. He has death in his family, so our well wishes are with him and his family. Ms. Parker's out handling some business, and Ms. Ferguson's out tonight, so... Adam, Chike, and myself, we're going to hold it down for you all tonight. But, Chike, you're going to help me out with the co-host spot. How have you been? What's your 2 weeks been like?
Busy, crazy. I was loaded down with conversations with Chike Evans' work, which, you know, I'm blessed to do. It seems like it's been forever since we've been on air. It seems longer than 2 weeks, actually. But yeah. I'm happy to be back.
Yes, I'm glad to be back.
How about you?
I've been extremely busy. I actually was in Houston, Texas. I've never been there before, but I went there for a week, 7 days, and got to experience all the great eating they do out there. I mean, they throw down there, and I felt so bad. I said when I come back, I have to do a detox because it's totally off my diet and what I usually eat. But I had a good time out there. I caught a cold out there. But it was a very productive trip. But yeah, definitely glad to be back and everything. Back to business as usual.
Yes, sir.
Now, Adam, I know you're on. What's going on with you, Adam? How you been the last couple weeks or so?
Pretty good. Pretty busy. You know, I didn't get any trips out of town like some people, but just been keeping it busy at work and some side projects. So it's been pretty good.
That's what's up. Definitely a good thing. So, what's going on in the movies?
Wow. Adam, you go ahead and take it, Adam.
Okay, and, you know, it has been a busy past 2 weeks. I had an intent to see a few movies. I've only seen one so far, but 42 is still on my radar. But I ended up seeing Oblivion this past weekend, the new Tom Cruise movie. Basically, it's a futuristic kind of, I guess, sci-fi action movie where Tom Cruise and another person plays the cleanup crew in the future. It's the year 2077. There was a war with the alien race, and now to move on to this new planet, Cruise is kind of maintaining these machines that are kind of getting energy from the Earth, from the oceans, and along the way, you know, he gets curious, he wants to know what happened, and that unravels a whole new story and a whole new adventure. I liked it a lot. It was really good. You know, it had its points of action. It had its kind of twists. It had its things to keep you guessing. Story kind of jumped around a little bit near the end, but overall it was really good. The director did a good job. The visuals were nice. Director, his movie beforehand was Tron Legacy. So very good with the visuals, very good with the angles and everything like that. Yeah, I would recommend.
Yeah, I actually, in watching that movie, I actually, that was a mental note that I made about the cinematography. It was really, really excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, usually you watch a movie and it doesn't, you know, you don't think about it, but this movie, they did really good with, like you said, the cinematography was really great. I enjoyed it.
I actually did see 42, which I thought was very brilliant. It was very realistic in the sense that you got a sense of what Jackie Robinson actually went through being the first African American in the major leagues. And it wasn't just his story, it was also Branch Rickey's story as well. He was the general manager for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and the work that he went through to help support Jackie Robinson in that journey, being the first African-American in Major League. High drama, very entertaining. I think that a lot of people, if you don't know who Jackie Robinson is or understand his story, you definitely will get a sense of the homage that you should pay to him for going through, you know, what he went through to be in that space, and how many doors he's opened up, not just for African-Americans in sports, but African-Americans in any type of facet in mainstream America. So I highly advise people to check that one out. I also saw The Evil Dead, which is a remake from the 1980s called Classic Evil Dead. that movie was pure gore fest. If you're into gore... It was a horror movie, but it wasn't so much horror as it was into the gore part of it. And it's a throwback to the movies of the 70s and 80s that really went head on with gore. It went right back to that. So if you're a gore head, definitely go see The Evil Dead. You won't be disappointed. And I want to touch on Tyler Perry's Temptation. I know that came out a few weeks ago, but we were on hiatus when that movie came out. And the reason that I want to bring this movie up is because Tyler Perry in the press has been beat up a little bit for this particular movie. And they're saying that he has a malt liquor brand of delivery for his art. So basically they're saying that he's dummying down his movies so that they're palatable for his market, which is African-American people. They don't come straight out and say that, but that's pretty much what they mean, that he has a malt liquor formula for his movie delivery. I can somewhat agree with that because, you know, anyone who's seen Tyler Perry's films knows that he has a particular delivery. He does have poignant messages in his movie, but they all basically have the same kind of formula. And I guess they're basically challenging him to try something else. I'm not opposed to that. Me personally, I'm getting a little sick of Tyler Perry's formula. I would like for him to challenge his audience to go on different types of journeys. I'm just saying. You know how I am. You know how I feel about my art. And I would just,
you know,
I want him to try something different. What are you going to say,
Adam?
He
has something coming out, right? He has something coming out this summer again, doesn't he? People?
Yeah.
Or what?
Yeah. I'm going to say this. The man is a hustler. He does kick out a lot of work. I'm just asking for maybe having another director come in, maybe work with other writers as well as himself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he could,
yeah,
you know, he could be more of a producer on his own project as well as doing everything.
Yeah,
I know that he also has projects coming out with Oprah Winfrey at the end of May. He has some shows debuting on the OWN Network, which I'm very interested in seeing. But I'm hoping that, you know, being as though this is a new venture, he takes a deep breath and he adds some new elements to his work. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see with this movie, too, that he has coming out. Maybe he surprises us.
I hope so. So looking forward, there are some movies that I'm looking forward to see. I know Man of Steel is on my list. The movie that's coming out called Mud with Matthew McConaughey is on my list. They're saying that, you know, he's giving the performance of his life in this movie, so I'm dying to see that. Star Trek is coming up, Iron Man 3, The Lone Ranger, the remake of Carrie, The Hunger Games, Catching Fire. Those are just some on my list. Adam, do you have any?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is, we're getting to the good season. We're getting to the summer blockbuster season. So, you know, as you mentioned, Iron Man 3, just in a couple of weeks. We got Great Gatsby coming out.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Trek movie, of course, Lone Ranger, the Will Smith movie with his son, After Earth. And it just kind of snowballed. Yeah, A.E., After Earth. You know, and it snowballed from there. World War Z, the Brad Pitt movie, White House Down, which is kind of similar to, I feel like it's similar to the Olympus Has Fallen. It's another White House attacked movie. We'll see. But, yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of good movies that are out right now and that are coming up. So I'm pretty excited.
Oh, very good.
All right. Well, we'll definitely be on the lookout for your recommendations and look forward to your reviews on the movie. So, as always, Adam, we thank you. Talk to you again next week, okay?
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
You too, Adam.
Now, as I said, A-Ron is out. He had death in the family, so our thoughts and prayers with his family. I did just want to touch on sports. You know, Kobe is out for the rest of the season for the Los Angeles Lakers. They're saying, you know, he's 35 years old, 35, I believe 35, 36 years old, and thinking that with his injury, will he be able to recover and get back to the level of excellence that he was playing at. He even tweeted about it after he hurt himself. He said, they expect me to come back like I was at 35 years old. Do you think Kobe should end it? Retire, or do you think he should try to make a comeback?
Me personally thinking he's made all the money that he can make. Not all that he can make, but he's made a substantial amount of money. Why not retire and try something else?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, he's already a legend. Why not try something else? But I think that his ego is going to propel him to come back and try to do more.
Which could hurt him, but hopefully he'll make the right decision, you know, because he is, like you said, he is a legend in his own right, and he's done so much, you know, for the Lakers and for his career. Hopefully he can bow out gracefully, you know, but whatever he decides, I wish him the best. So that's my little sports contribution, and A-Rod can fill us in with everything else when he gets back next week.
Absolutely.
So let's go over this entertainment news. You know, we'll have Ms. Parker to go over so you and I can handle this. First, I want to, not really entertainment, but world news. You know, we had the Boston Marathon bombing last week. And, you know, the two brothers, at first they said it was black or dark-skinned man, but it was actually two brothers who did the bomb. One was 26, one was 19. Their parents believe, their mother and their father both believe that they were set up and they really didn't do this. I believe one of their aunts was interviewed on CNN. She believes the same thing. One of the uncles on the dad's side said the boys are losers and that...
Yeah, the uncle was ruthless.
yeah, he was. And he thinks that they did do it. They, as you know, they killed the 26-year-old. There was a shoot-off between him and some of the police officers, and they captured the 19-year-old alive. What are your thoughts on that whole tragedy?
Well, one of the things that was talked about is if they were a part of a larger cell, and they were pointing out components that gave support to that. Like, for one, the lack of premeditation. Because if you're going to do something like that, and all the time that spanned between the time the bombs went off and then them actually catching them, they could have been out of the country. and they didn't have the financial resources, because the only reason that they became on the radar was because they tried to rob a 7-Eleven and the cameras caught them. That's how they got caught. And they were saying that they were trying to rob the 7-Eleven to finance the getaway. So if they were part of a larger cell, why didn't they have the resources to escape? So I don't think that it was something that, you know, was greater than them. I think that maybe this is another situation where you have a pocket of hatred, and for whatever motivation, they did what they did. And now I understand that one, you know, the self-inflicting wound where he shot himself in the throat, he can't talk. So how are we going to get to the bottom of it?
Right, yeah. And one of the people who's been following, he was on CNN today, he thinks that they were trained overseas, one of these extremist terrorist groups. He said that because of he said, although you can learn how to make bombs online, you can learn how to do some of these things, the planning that they had, like the bombs going off 12 seconds of, you know, time together, and just some of the things he said, he just believes that there was more teaching to that.
The older one, the 26-year-old, was married with a child. And one of the things that he stated was he hated Americans and he didn't have any friends here, that we were unfriendly. But you were here for 10 years. You didn't make one friend, not one person. You didn't reach out to one person, not necessarily a friend, but even an associate in 10 years. Is the problem Americans, or is the problem you?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure we'll continue to learn more, because they talk about this thing every day. You know, so we'll learn more as time goes on. Let's switch gears. Now, you know, I told you I was in Houston, and Rihanna's on tour, and I was driving somewhere, and listening to the local radio station, they kept playing Rihanna songs. They were so excited. Rihanna was in Houston in concert, you know, and everybody was so excited trying to win tickets. And later on the day, I was going back to my hotel room, and she had canceled. And they were all disappointed, you know, she's going to reschedule. She's here in Atlanta
tonight. Just like
tonight.
A diva.
You're right. They said she was under the weather. She is here in Atlanta tonight, and from what I know, the show's going on. There were rumors that she was going to be the new face of Chanel. You know, she's had some issues with some of the sponsors because some of her recent behavior, and it's kind of wild and not really the face of, I can't remember the other, that someone, they canceled her contract. But anyway, Chanel had come out and said that she is not going to be the face of Chanel, and so kind of put those rumors to the side. Your thoughts on Rihanna and what's going on in her world?
Maybe this may be the thing that reels her in. You know, money talks. So maybe this is the start of her getting together, quote unquote. I don't know. I'm sure her PR people will devise up something to help her gain all her sponsorship and stuff back.
Something will happen. Gotta give her credit. She just broke Billboard history. This is Rihanna becomes the first artist in 20-year history of Billboard's Nielsen BDS Bass Pop Songs Radio chart play, or airplay chart, to tally 10 number ones as Stay, which is her current single, rises from number two to number one. So her singles are SOS, Take a Bow, Disturbia, Live Your Life, Rude Boy, Love the Way You Lie, The Only Girl in the World, S&M, and We Found Love, and Now Stay. So she is still doing big things in her music career. So, and she was nominated, I believe, for 10 Billboard Music Awards. I read something about that. But anyway, so she's still making a name for herself in the music world. So, you know, I guess she's doing some stuff right. I think some of her edgy behaviors would kind of attract people to her for some reason, because she has, like, that little bad girl image. I just hope she's able to know the difference between reality and...
Industry insider actually told me something about Miss Rihanna and the fact that she's not necessarily in control over her own image, that she's being puppeteered to do that.
Oh, I believe
to be that.
That way. I believe that. I totally believe that. Totally believe that. Let's move on to the girl Beyonce. She's on tour, the Mrs. Carter World Tour. She was in concert, and two fans, one slapped her in the face as she was leaving, going between the crowd, another one grabbed her hair.
Oh.
I mean, what's wrong with people? What's wrong with people?
Oh.
They said she needs stronger security. But
those are the ones she needs to be saying, bow down, be bound down to.
All right. Well, she's still making moves. She was also named for this spring and summer, I believe, the face of H&M clothing line. So she's still doing big things. So, you know, Beyonce, to me, she's a hot chick in the game right now. I don't really care for all her songs, but I think, she, you know, talent is talent, and she's fine. So, you know, she's doing her thing.
And I hear her costuming is too racy for people to have pictures. Like, they won't post pictures of them because they're too racy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, Beyonce.
Right?
What else? I was reading ELTM blog, and I saw that Reese Witherspoon, who's here in Atlanta, shooting a movie called The Good Life, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her husband were both arrested for DUI. Her husband was driving, and, you know, he got pulled over. You know, obviously he failed the breathalyzer. She went off on the mouth saying, do you know who I am? You're going to make national news with this story. So both of them got arrested for DUI. Reese released a statement today saying that she obviously had one too many and she's embarrassed by her actions. So at least she's owning up to it. I think we've all been in a place where we had one too many.
Stranger to the sauce.
Exactly. So, you know. I mean, it all happened to us, Reese. Wish you the best and much success with the movie. She's had a great image up here, so hopefully that won't bother. Now, Juanita Bonham, you know that is. She's the evangelist. I believe that's her title. She was arrested over the weekend by a promoter who apparently said that she was, there were not much details, but she was scheduled to do a gig, took the money for the gig, but never showed up. So she was arrested for that, and they have her mugshot online. So, you know, she had, remember a couple years back, she had some issues with her then-husband for a domestic dispute in the parking lot somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm sure, obviously, it's isolated incidents, but hopefully she can get everything together and get back to spreading the word of God and not just other drama. All right, let's see what else we have. Oh,
can we please talk about Portia and her divorce? Can we please talk about that?
Yeah, please. Tell us about Portia. I mean, Portia.
I just find this really funny. I mean, I'm sorry that it's her life and she's going through this stuff, but her and her husband are staying in the same house, and she has to find out on Twitter that she's getting a divorce.
Yeah.
And he's, like, down the hall in a couple rooms down, and she finds out on Twitter that she's getting a divorce. I don't know the particulars of their situation, but all I can say is Cordell should move a little bit better than that because they don't have a prenup. So he basically just pulled the pin out of his own grenade.
Mm-hmm. All that money. Yeah, I saw her on some show she was talking about how she found out, and I believe they're still living in the same house.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure they will be up until the very end because that's going to be a nasty fight.
So when he's moving out.
Right?
He's moving out because he doesn't have a prenup.
Oh, another thing. I'm sorry. Do you watch Ayanna Vanzant Fix My Life?
I didn't, but I did catch most of her interview with DMX.
How much of a train wreck was that?
Man.
I didn't know he was that bad.
Yeah.
Praying for you, Brother Earl. Praying for you, Brother Earl.
Yeah. And like you say, one thing that he did say that was poignant to me, and I think it's interesting because we're having Greg Schiller on tonight about, you know, both about being a good father, learning how to be a good father, is that he felt like with his son, they have a damaged relationship, but he felt like he did the best he knew how. He said he had no reference. He had no one he knew had a father. So he didn't know how to be a good father. He thought he was doing the best he could. And so that
right.
was
And to be honest, watching that took me to places that, you know, I had to deal with my own father, because I used to get that same speech from my father. You know, he didn't have a father that set a template for him to be a father
right.
to me. But at the same time, I understood where his son was coming from. All you have to do is listen to me. I'm asking you for certain things. All you have to do is deliver or give me something in the neighborhood of what I'm asking for. We can meet a happy medium. You don't necessarily have to know how to be a father to express the love that you have for your child.
And, you know, also,
each relationship is different.
The addiction is so strong for him because his son basically told him that I can't have a relationship with you until you get clean. And DMX, you saw him get upset and say, you know, to see me at my funeral. Because
because he was saying you're putting conditions on our relationship. That's a major condition, dude. Drugs is a major condition.
Yeah, that was sad. But I definitely hope that the son, him and his son, and his ex-wife, they're able to pull it together and all have some type of relationship, you know, that's beneficial to everyone. Because that has to be a very difficult thing to grow up in and still have to deal with as an adult, you know, the son.
Yeah. For the first time in her career, the first time I ever saw Ayanla get out of character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw Hood come out of her.
Yeah. She won't play. You want to keep cussing out.
Right.
Now, that phone-wise of L.A., I don't watch this show, but apparently Drea Michelle, she has a clothing line, and so she decided to do drug awareness T-shirts. But now she's under fire because she decided to put Whitney Houston's face on the cover of her T-shirt.
Can she do that?
Well, apparently she did do it, and now she's getting so much backlash because, you know, especially in the African American community, you can't say too much about Whitney like that on a major stage. You know what I mean? And so
she'll be getting a phone call from Sissy Houston soon, I'm sure.
Right. So that was definitely a bad move, and she's definitely having to go on, defense for that. Last story, Danny DeCane, you know, Don Richards and Aubrey O'Day, both, you know, the band dismembered, and both have gone on to have pretty much, you know, pretty good success as solo artists, and they had this big, feud and everything. Well, they finally kissed and made up after 5 years. And hopefully they'll continue their friendship and be able to move on. And, you know, it's never good to have a feud between, especially people that you kind of came up together in the industry with. You know what I mean?
Right.
Hopefully that was a good reunion for them. That's all I had. Anything you want to add before we go to commercial?
Nope, I'm pretty much good.
All right. Well, we'll come back after this message. Right back after this.
All right.
There's a fire burning in the street. EOTM really, really can't be beat. There's so much we say to everyone we reach, changing lives with our scorching, steaming heat. We have a PR that gets you on TV. Don't let this pass you, cause everyone won't see. Call us, we will work out a great deal. Get you heard on a station that has wheels.
We will always be around. We can always be found. Got the net locked down, so you'll always have it on. We got the VJs, they can put you on the wave. So go ahead and say,
EOTM got it going.
EOTMradio.com. Check us out. Talk to Carla. Get the PR you need to get on TV. Take it from Ron Anthony, nominee for the South Florida Gospel Music Awards. Don't forget, let's take it to the street. All right? EOTM. Got it going on.
Welcome back to the Stephen Knight Show. Our first author, Greg Kilo, wrote a book that is sure to inspire fathers all over the world. He asked, Dad, have you ever wondered how you're doing as a father, feeling as if you could do better, wondering whether it's too late to do right or even make corrections, concerned that your time came and went and you blew the shot? Take heart. You're not alone in asking yourself whether you are on the plus or minus side as a dad and being afraid of the answer. And the dad who is there, my journey to becoming a plus-size father, Gretchen gives encouragement to all dads to keep the effort, no matter where you are and your father. He lets you know that it's never too late. You'll be glad you stayed with it, and you may even be doing better than you knew. Please help me welcome Greg Shiloh. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Glad to be with you. It took us a while to get here, didn't it?
It did take us a while, and I'm so glad that you reminded me, because I think this is something that all fathers can relate to, you know, regardless of where you are in that process. If you're a young father, older father, your kids are older, whatnot. Tell us about what led you to writing this book, and let's start there. What led you to write the book?
Well, you know, it's interesting because people had told me for a number of years I ought to write something. You know, I majored in English. I'd been a pastor and all that kind of stuff. And I just never felt that it was the time. I really felt that I needed to feel a call from God to write a book, or else simply be kind of an ego to make a name for myself. And one day I was walking past a picture of my daughter, Catherine, from a daddy-daughter dance that we had gone to here in Marietta, Georgia. And I just felt God saying inside my head, hey, write a book. And I said, well, great, okay, about what? And I felt the answer come back, being a father. I said, you know, I didn't want to do the Moses thing, hey, don't send me. But I said, you got to be kidding. I have made a lot of mistakes as a husband and a dad, and I've been told I made a lot of mistakes, and why in the world would you pick me? But okay, if that's what you want, that's what I'll do. And it was interesting. I do recruiting for a living now. And,
yes.
It was interesting that I had a contract come to an end, doing a recruiting contract, and I tried to find a contract. This was back when everything fell apart in late 2008, early 2009. And, you know, there was no work coming. And I just said, hey, Lord, what do you want to happen here? And felt the answer come back. Well, you wanted time to write a book. Go ahead. And it had all been planned for about a year. And I took 5 months and I wrote the book and submitted it to a number of publishers and agents, and got a call from Tate Publishing out in Oklahoma. They said they wanted to publish the book, so that's how it came to be.
Wow. So tell us about the journey of writing the book. I know it had to be cathartic and maybe just allowing you to kind of reflect on, you know, like you said, you made some mistakes, you did some things right, obviously. What was the process like for you?
Well, let's look at the end from the beginning here. When they called me from Tate, the lady who was the representative of the publisher said, Greg, I teach a Sunday school class for divorced women. And she said, the stuff that you're saying about yourself are the kinds of things that the women say about the men they divorced. She said, it's very rare that a man would own up to some of this stuff. And
yeah.
So... you know, that was sort of where it turned out, and so it's had a good effect. But the process, I couldn't have done it without a number of folks. So one of them, my good friend from college, George Donegan, who's a Methodist pastor, and he was in the publishing business with the Methodist Church for 20 years. He's now a pastor over in South Carolina. He helped me to organize it and structure it, and another lady named Catherine Bonner, who had already been published by Tate. She and I used to work together, and the two of them kind of gave me a leg up in how to do it. But the process itself in terms of technique was, you know, I outlined it, then I came up with chapter headings and chapter paragraphs that each chapter would be about, and then just sat down and wrote and prayed, okay, God, you want to write this thing, go ahead, do it through me. And and it all just came flowing out of there and got it into a finished product.
Wow. So have your children read the book?
I believe they have. I know at least a couple of them have.
I was wondering, did they learn anything new that maybe they didn't know about what was going on in Dad's head, raising them? Did they give you any feedback?
I think, some of the most positive stuff, and my son, whom I know is listening to this, you know, he was over in Afghanistan, I think, and said, Dad, you know, it was a pretty good read. So that was
wow.
A compliment. But one of the things that's gratifying to me is that the last time he and his family were in town, he has a young daughter named Samantha, who will be three. He was playing some games with her, and I started playing some games with her, you know, physical games. Like I do this thing with the kids when they were little called Ah Plop, and I'd pick them up in the middle of their back and their legs, kind of gently drop them on a bed, and not only to have some fun with them, but also to teach them some security in their physical surrounding. And Don said to Samantha, he said, you know, my dad and I used to play that game together, and now you and I play games together. And so, you know, the whole sense of bonding there with my son and my granddaughter was kind of a good thing. So a number has come up like that, yeah.
Wow. So we were talking, and we're, I don't know if you're listening, we were doing entertainment news. We were talking about DMX as a rapper who, he was on a show, and he and his son had a very stressful relationship,
yeah.
And still do, because he did not have his theory is that he didn't have a father or any kind of example,
right.
of what a father's supposed to do. You know, he said that one thing you always knew is that I loved you, even if I didn't show it in the right way. How do you suggest someone in that situation who knows that they probably have failed as a father, not hasn't been a good father, how do they recover to a child who's almost grown? How do they repair the relationship?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, I was listening, by the way. And,
okay.
You know, I guess if I had to distill it all down to something, it would be this, that, you know, God the Father is a father, and he's the best father. He's the example of fathering. And he sent his son to die for us so that because of that death we could turn to him and receive him as our Savior, and then be reunited with our Father in the proper kind of relationship. And I would urge any man that's listening that the first thing you have to get straight is your relationship with your Heavenly Father, and that comes
mm-hmm.
to accept Jesus, his Son, as your Savior. And that's what I had to do. You know, I went to God the Father long after I became Christian and said, look, why did you give me the earthly father that you gave me? I've never asked you that. And
right.
I love my dad, and you know, he was he had his faults, but I loved my dad, and there were a lot of good things about him. But there was some incompleteness there, just as you're discussing about DMX. And so, you know, the answer I got was so that you would turn to me, meaning God wanted me to turn to him as father. And he's the only
right.
one that can really fill in all the blanks. If we have had deficient fathers in our own lives, and then we pass all that deficiency, the way to break the chain is to turn to God the Father through Jesus Christ. Ask him to heal us in the places where we have been hurt and wounded by our own fathers, where they have been deficient. And then as that healing occurs, we can become a better father to the children that we have.
Wow. You know,
That's a theological thing. But on the practical side, I think it's, you know, how can you tell your kids you love them, tell them that you're proud of them, tell them that they're good at something. And that usually goes a long way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had a friend in school who, he and his father, they clashed. I mean, they even got in a physical fight. You know, just so much resentment. And I remember talking to him about it because he just didn't want anything to do with his father. And I told him that and this was just my theory, and this was me in my early 20s, I was like, I believe that if you don't have until you're able to make things right with your father, it's going to affect the way you parent your own son when you have one. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, today he has a son, and he and his father have made up, and I think that's really made a big impact on the way he parents, you know, because if you have that, what are your thoughts on that, like having that resentment or that bitterness towards your father and how it can, even the ways you may not realize, can, you know, filter out in the way you parent? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, thanks for asking. You know, I think the key is you got to forgive, no matter how hard it is. It's important to admit that, yeah, what your dad did to you, whether it was by something he did or something he didn't do, really hurt you. You got to admit it's there. You got to admit it was true. You got to admit it hurt. But then I think if you confess it and say, Lord, help me to forgive. You know, one of the things that I appreciate about the Lord Jesus and about the scripture is that it talks about forgiving others just as we've been forgiven. And when I stop and think of what I want to hold against somebody else, you know, Lord died for all of my sins, and I have no right to hold me against anybody else. So now there are times you make stands for things and you make stands on issues and particular points, but you know, forgiveness needs to be there. You know, it took me a long time to forgive my dad. He died in 1982, and I don't think it probably took me 20 more years to get through all of the stuff and forgive him. But I've forgiven him, and I think once we start getting stuff cleaned out, it's a lot easier then to relate to our dads, and if they're still around, and also our own kids, because we don't pass that stuff along, and we don't pass along that resentment and that bitterness.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually have a question.
Sure.
I lost my father last year, and we had some issues that we were dealing with. At the time of his death, we were not speaking. And,
oh, boy.
Yeah, and I find myself understanding more about him now that he's gone than I did when he was alive.
Yeah.
And you just briefly touched on that. So is that going to be an ongoing thing where I'll come to forgive him even though he's not around for me to have that communication?
It sure has been for me.
Okay.
You know, there have been times when I've just sat down and said, oh, my gosh, you know, I didn't see that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, I had a professor years ago who talked to us about our parents, and he said, you know, if your parents could have done a better job, they would have. And, you know, I've had to think about that, because that then says, you know, my parents, my dad was a human being, and he had influences that hurt him and stopped him. And when I start looking at him as a human being just like me, who has had ups and downs and ins and outs and successes and failures, and you know, he was trying to be a parent in the middle of all that, it's a lot easier to say, oh, I get it, than it to say, okay, I expect my dad or my mom to be these perfect people, and if they fall off of that, then something's wrong and I'm going to be mad at them. That doesn't work.
Yeah. I agree, and I think that for me, you know, when I used to work with the youth, and when I was doing that, that's when I got a great appreciation for both of my parents. You know, their flaws and, you know, the good things they were doing. And I think you made some really great points there. Let's talk, you know, before we go, tell us about, I know you've done a lot with this book, and it's gone to different countries. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm going to, Nancy and I are going to South Africa, I think in October. We're kind of zeroing in on October. We have a missionary friend there, and the missionaries from our church come home every year, and we have a missionary festival and kind of give them some R&R. And I was praying for probably 4 weeks or so about the missionaries, particularly this one guy from South Africa, and I thought, you know, what's that all about? And I kind of felt that I was supposed to tell him about the book, and I thought, why would he care about that? But so I told him, and he said, oh, my gosh, he said, that's so great. He said, we have a huge problem in South Africa of fathers abandoning their wives, husbands abandoning their wives, and the fathers their children. And he said, if you could come over and speak to some people about not only your own experience, but, you know, this whole idea of God as father, God is the perfect father, the dad who is always there. He's the one who's always there. How good that would be. And I got an email from him today saying that I thought he was going to put me in churches, pastors, but he's actually going to put me in high schools. And I'll get a chance to talk with, the teachers will hear it, the administration will hear it, the kids will hear it. And so, we'll see how that goes. But, the message, the ultimate message in this is no matter what kind of dad we had, no matter what kind of dad we've been, God is the perfect father who's always there to help us be even better if we're dads now.
Amen. The book is called The Dad Who Was There, My Journey to Becoming a Plus-Size Father. Gretchen, I want to thank you so much for being on tonight.
A pleasure.
Sharing your story, and also for getting that message out. I don't think that we as men hear that enough, are encouraged to, that it's not too late, and also remembering who is our father. So I want to thank you for that, for being on our show tonight. For more information about Greg Schiller, where you can purchase this book, please visit our Facebook page, The Stephen Knight Show, or you can go to gregschiller.com. There'll be a link on our Facebook page. Thanks again, Greg, and have a great night, okay?
Pleasure. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, fellas. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Right. We'll be right back after this with April Marquette.
You're listening to The Stephen Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. You're listening now. You're listening to The Stephen Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. The Stephen Knight Show, Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on EOTMRadio.com.
April Lisa Marquette developed her love for writing early on. While attending college, she enjoyed creative writing and literature lessons offered. The path for her life was charted. However, on her journey to becoming a full-time author, she worked on Wall Street for one of America's most recognized real estate tycoons. This author, whose women's fiction has been called spicy, has worked for publishing houses as well and in the commercial technology arena. She is a playwright, editor, and motivational speaker, and has a newly highly anticipated book entitled Improbable, The Chords, The Generation Next, Book One. That will be available next month. Please tell me welcome to the show, Ms. April Marchand. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, before we get into your upcoming novel, tell us a little bit about the path that led you to becoming a full-time author, especially for those out there who are interested in going that route. Tell us about your story.
Well, I was working on a job, and it wasn't doing it for me. And so
okay.
I just, I had to pray and I asked God, what do you want from me? And he led me to what I'd been doing all the time. I'd always been writing.
Wow.
So I met a lady and she was a publisher and she published my first book and we took off from there.
And the rest is history. The rest is history.
It sure is. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, for your spicy women's fiction novels, how did you get into that genre? What attracts you to that?
Well, a man once said to me, what do you write? You write love stories? He said that because, I'm a woman. But
right.
It's not that I write love stories. If the story entails love, I write that. If it entails spicy things, erotica, whatever.
Right,
I write about it, but I also write about the hard things that women have to face, like, trying to raise children, trying to deal with aging parents, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is your favorite book that you've written thus far, and why is it so important to you?
I think this is the favorite. Every next one is the favorite.
Yeah,
it's the favorite at that time. This one's important to me because you know how lots of authors, we have all these authors, the vampire series and whatnot, but the mamas don't usually have a whole lot of books that are for them. So I write for mothers.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what's the process? How do you come up with a theme or how do you tell a story? What's your process?
Well, the stories actually come to me. I hear conversations, and from the conversations, I kind of understand what the story is going to be about, and then I look up the names. And like if the name Thomas is in the book, Thomas means twin, so I know that person's going to be two-faced.
I heard that. So what are some of the feedbacks you get from mothers that are reading these books and they get that escape? Because for me, I wasn't a big book reader, but when I started reading, I said, okay, let me start reading some books. Let's do that. That'll be a goal. I started a couple years ago, and it was like an escape. It's like a movie. It's like,
oh, yeah.
And even more descriptive than the movie. What are some of the feedback you've gotten on your own work from the mothers who are reading your book?
Well, you know that I'm African-American, but I get from other people, white people sometimes, they say, well, you know what, you drew me into this culture that wasn't mine. And they're really excited. They say they feel emotionally jolted. Sometimes, you know, they feel really sexy and they have to go and try some stuff out on their husbands or, you know, their significant others.
Wow. That's great. Well, let's talk about, because you have a trilogy that you're working on. The first one is Improbable, Co-Arts, Generation Next, book one.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, this book, it was a spinoff from the Cohort Trilogy. The Cohort Trilogy was about a gay male and his three women friends. And so when I closed that trilogy, people kept asking, are we never going to see the cohorts again? So I figured out a way to bring the cohorts back, but to do something new at the same time. So I started writing about their children. That's why it's called Generation Next.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the, enough without giving it away, because I definitely wanted to get this book, tell us some of the things that we can expect.
Well, some of the things you can expect in this book is you're going to see the cohorts. I'm not going to tell you which ones. Their offspring, and their offspring happens to be named Gemma Janelle, and this is her story. She's second-generation Hollywood, and she winds up finding herself in all these sticky situations when she really wants to get stuff right with this one man. And the one man is this brooding heir to two fortunes. But there's another woman in the picture, and she knows everybody thinks she's a bimbo, but she feels that that's okay because she has a plan. You know, she's got a new name, she got new boobs, new eye, new hair color, just new everything. But there's only one thing standing in her way, and that's our lead character, which is Gemma Janelle. Now, she can get rid of her. You know, it's just like in real life. Some women think if they get rid of you, then they can have the man, not understanding that the man has a choice in this, too.
Exactly. So, when anytime you put out a book, obviously it's like, what would you say, it's like birthing a child in a sense?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it really is, because it takes so long to do it, and then you're just so excited, and then when you get it back, you know, when you get that first book back, you just want to touch all over it, and you know how mothers, they want to count all the fingers and the toes. You want to count all the pages, and it's really exciting.
Wow, that's great. Well, I'm so excited for you. Another book will be a hit, just like the rest of them. Do you know when book two is coming out? Do you have an idea?
Now, see, you're getting greedy. I do not know when book two is going to come out, but you know what? I'd be glad to come back on the show and talk about it.
I can't wait to have you back on, and I wish you all the success of this book. Now,
can I ask a question?
Yes, you certainly can.
What is your process? Like, when you start a project, do you have a certain procedure that you go through to start a book? Because I, too, write, and I was just wondering if authors had a particular process that they went through when they were creating.
Well, I know for me, I'm going to tell you the truth. When I start a book, I have no idea where it's going to go. And in one of my books, I wrote, you know how you write the dedication? I wrote to the creator, thank you for allowing me to be the first person who gets to read the book. Because sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm typing and I'm just like, oh, my God, look at that. So I feel like readers feel when they read it. I feel like, When you're a writer, you are a type of medium. You're open. And so the story can come to you. And I feel that the story is never finished until you just can't write anymore.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Wow. I mean, last question, what advice would you give someone who really wants, I know that you prayed on it and you really, you feel it was a divine thing that God brought this to your life full time. What advice do you give someone who is sitting at a job that they're just not feeling and they know that they should be doing this? This is what they should be doing. How do you encourage them to take that leap of faith?
I would encourage them to do, because, see, I can only tell you from my experience, I would encourage them to do what I did. I was like a drug addict. I was writing on napkins and little bitty bits of piece of paper and receipts and everything. Even though I have these micromanagers standing over my shoulder, I was finding time to do this. You know how Bishop Jake says you have to maximize your moments? Yeah, you may be working to pay the mortgage or to pay the rent, but if you know that you have this thing that you have to do and this is what you've been called to do, then you're going to have to find time to do it because then a door is going to open. Lots of people told me no. They told me, oh, you can't do that. And when I started, the field wasn't wide open to us. And so I had to just know deep inside me that this had to happen for me because why else would I have this gift? So you just have to keep pressing despite what people say to you.
I heard that. Well, listen, thank you so much. The book is called Improbable, The Core, Generation Next, Book One. And that's out next month. Where can people get their hands on the book once it's out?
They can find it at Amazon.com. They can find it at Barnes & Noble, just a host of places online. If you put my name in Google or you put it in Bing, you'll find tons of places to find it. In Atlanta, you can find it at Charis Bookstores and Outright Bookstores and at Books A Million, and even overseas it is.
Wow, that's great. Well, much success to you in the new book, and I can't wait to talk to you about book two. And for more information about April Marquette, go to our Facebook page, The Stephen Knight Show. And, again, we wish you all success. Have a great night, and thanks for being on tonight. And we'll be right back with Stephen Fuller.
You're listening to The Stephen Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. You're listening now. You're listening to The Stephen Knight Talk Show on EOTM Radio. The Stephen Knight Show, Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on EOTMRadio.com.
Well, now it's time to go on to Stephen's playlist. As you know, we receive music from people all over the country. Want to be featured there in this segment. Each week we select artists to play on our playlist. And tonight our playlist features songs by both independent and major artists, including James Lamar, Beyonce, Drake, and many more. If you're interested in being featured on Stephen's playlist, please email us at thestephennightshow@gmail.com. Attach one or two songs, your bio, and one or two promotional pictures. Now remember, all songs must be edited for radio, meaning no cursing. We definitely look forward to hearing your music. Now, the first song is by Rihanna, who's in Atlanta tonight, featuring Future, entitled Love and Affection. Check it out and enjoy. Stephen's playlist.
I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I need love and affection.
DJ Love,
and I
DJ
hope
Love.
I'm not sounding too desperate. I need love and affection.
Baby, you can give me what I want, baby. Stylistic enemies, held captive by a social monopoly. Electric persecution through TV. We're laid with beef, but full of his belly. Ayo, too many truths in the middle east, but not enough in the southeast. A wicked plot to obtain your brain, mind control through pain. Ayo, gotta get self-awareness, even when the system makes you feel irrelevant. River dancing on catastrophe, sinking in to vigilant seas. Ayo, questioning what is reality. Listening to the streets, I guess that you should be the new me. You only sell your soul when you can't pay attention for free. Anatomy. Not enough people rocking the mic lyrically, speaking on the world eloquently. Times are massive warming globally, but we focus more on Britney, Donna, Rosie. Attacking each other verbally on sexuality. We battle mentally, while losing spiritually. Cause the real corporate shake hands economically. Money reflective of greed becomes a god. And God we trust me, hypocrisy. Cause if we really trusted them, we would just be. Won't be too much on earth to see. If we keep on having God complexity. I said, won't be too much on earth to see. If we keep on having God complexity. Hey yo.
Perception and reality, twisted elegance await me at the corner, at the street. I am the beat that never sleeps. I am the heart that gets skipped over by dirty feet on hot concrete. My cardboard box tells a story. I've seen breakthroughs persecuted by police. I've seen rain, acid rain fall down and see ocean waves roar with anger, washing up missing strangers. Danger! Danger! I call little baby savior in the manger. I am right every time I give oxygen
to your mind. I am the treasure that you can always find. Open up your eyes. The eyes on verses with lies. There is hope with compromise. Let real children rise and damn shadows in permission's eyes. Let ego lay down in submission. For your only mission should be admission into a new institution of solutions. Let atomic bombs cause no harm. Let oil spills be sealed. Let Wall Street be free. Let bullying cease. Let equality be for all peace. Let it be. Let it be.
Guaranteed.
My friendship was guaranteed. You got my ego in.
to be cocky. I got so hard in my pocket.
We don't want to
Got it.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real from the jump. Living at my mama's house, we'd argue every month, nigga. I was trying to get it on my own. Working all night, traffic on the way home. And my uncle calling me like, where you at? I gave you the keys, so you bring it right back, nigga. I just think it's funny how it goes. Now I'm on the road, half a million for a show. And we started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Always tell stories about the man. Say I never struggled, wasn't hungry, yeah, I doubt it, nigga. I could turn your boy into the man. There ain't really much out here that's popping off without us, nigga. We just want the credit where it's due. I'ma worry about me, give a fuck about you, nigga. Just as a reminder to myself, I wear every single chain, even when I'm in the house. Cause we started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. No new niggas, nigga, we don't feel that. Fuck a fake friend, where your real friends at? We don't like to do too much explaining. Story stay the same, I never changed it. No new niggas, nigga, we don't feel that. Fuck a fake friend, where your real friends at? We don't like to do too much explaining. Story stay the same through the money and the fame. Cause we came in the game with no landing and changes. These fuck niggas was hanging in 10 different ways. They see you, then smile on your face. Smile on your face. You wanted me up, name and time and replace. I'm smoking a fire, my nigga, you know that it's fire. You smell it as soon as I blaze it. Burning a pound, burning a pound, burning a pound. Yeah, it's going down, it's going down, it's going down. Started from the bottom, now we here. Had a dream by the car, and when it got it in a year. All black trucks when we pull up to the Lear. All black coupe, I look like Bruce when I'm steering. Hope the homie Drake don't get pissed, but niggas never ever put your man on songs like this. And I probably said no to it before, but I made 20 million, so we should probably go on tour. And I just seen Waka the other day. He wasn't tripping, we just talked about the money we've been making. Cause we
started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here.
Bunch of young niggas, man, we all doing this shit.
Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here.
We all up now.
Started from the bottom, now my whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team.
I
That was Steven's playlist. I want to give a shout out to our authors that we had tonight, our guests, Greg Schillo and April Marquette. Check out Greg's book, The Dad Who Is There, My Journey to Becoming a Plus Side Father. You can check that out today. And April's spicy novel, Improbable, The Cohorts Generation Next, Book 1, which will be out next month. You can go on our Facebook page, The Stephen Knight Show, for more information where you get those books. I want to give a shout out to Chike for stepping in the co-host spot today. I definitely appreciate you and being so candid with our guests. Thanks again, Chike, if you're still on. Thank you so much. And hopefully our whole crew is back next week. Aaron, our thoughts and prayers with you and your family. Miss Parker, Gennaro, we miss y'all. But we'll see y'all again all next week. Have a great week, and God bless.
Good night.
I just love.